Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And my guest today is somebody that knows all about the challenges and how to grow an agency. It's none other than the founder and CEO of Resignal, Kevin Gibbons. Hi.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. It's good to be involved in this. And yeah, looking forward to the conversation.
No problem. Well, for the people who's watching and listening to this, who doesn't understand your background and where you've come from, could you give us a whirlwind tour of how you started in the agency and where you are now?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'll try and give you a top level and then we can dig into wherever you want to go deeper. But I've been involved in SEO since 2003. So at the time I was a student, I was working at a web design agency while still at university, actually, on placement year. And I've developed kind of SEO skills from an early stage, initially as a freelancer. I set up what publicly looked like an agency in 2006 as a freelancer called SE Optimize. And at the time I spent a year traveling in Australia. So kind of doing the after university life thing. I teamed up with a business partner in 2007 and we actually set up a limited company and decided to grow that as an agency. I guess there's two parts of my story. There's kind of like 2006 to 2012 is very much how I grew that agency with a business partner in Oxfordshire, and we got to about 15 or so people, just over a million in revenue. And in 2012, I made the decision to actually split away and almost start again. We kind of split the agency in half a little bit, but I kind of went back to, we were four people originally in 2012. And then we grew from kind of that base through to where we are today. So currently we're 18 people as Resignal. So I'm kind of founder and CEO of a company. I focus on the agency growth side. We've specialized in SEO, and that's kind of taken us to work with some great brands and clients over that time. It's been, I think any agency owner will say, it's kind of like a bit of a roller coaster in terms of quite often two steps forward, one step back. And I think if you're doing that, you're probably doing pretty well. Nothing's ever smooth sailing, but yeah, overall, it's certainly looking back at where that started in the early days. It's one of those that I think it's developed over time, but yeah, certainly happy with how that's progressed. And obviously the industry has changed a lot in almost 20 years. In fact, if you start back from 2003, it's kind of over 20 years now.
Right. So what would you wish you knew now? No, rephrase that. What would you wish that you know now right at the beginning?
Yeah. There's loads of things I wish I knew now that I probably still don't know, but that's right. I think in terms of, it is a bit, you don't know what you don't know. And certainly at every stage, and I could say that's including now, but back then there's certain things about just running a business. I got into it because I found I was good at SEO and I enjoyed it. I made money from affiliate websites. I turned that into freelance consultancy and turned that into an agency. And my passion had always been doing my craft, which was SEO. So kind of the consultancy side, and basically helping clients with what I'd done for myself before, which is to use those skills to rank highly on Google. It helps make those clients more revenue. That became, obviously there's a progression in terms of consultancy of how you do that, how you account manage, project manage, et cetera, that becomes more of a team game. And I think, I wouldn't say that's easy. There's a lot of skills that you need to be able to develop on that side. But I think what I wish I'd have known in the early stages was just the business side, which is basically what I do now, and how to structure a leadership team, how to focus on client retention, operations, sales and marketing growth, like those three big things are really like the key drivers of the success and failure of any agency. And you need to be good across all of them. And I think in the past, my approach was just to learn as I went along, make mistakes, figure out how not to do it, and eventually kind of crack into something that works for me. And there's certainly ways to fast track that, which don't involve making a mistake at every step of the journey. And but equally, in other respects, sometimes you have to learn the hard way as well. So there's not always a magic wand. Or, I mean, I'm sure I've been given a lot of the great advice that maybe I've taken, maybe I haven't. And sometimes you just need to go through a bit of the pain to figure out, actually, in your own situation, which parts of those advice are you going to listen to? What are the learnings? And how do you take that forward? But like I say, I think if I start an agency today, I'd like to think we'd be further along the journey than I would have been when I got started, if you look at the amount of time that's gone involved in that trial and error and experimentation phase.
Right. So as your agency's grown and progressed, what would you say the key moment in times are where you had to totally restructure your whole processes? Is it a financial time, or what does it look like for, because people watching this, listening to this, who think, yeah, we can grow an agency, we can do this, we can do it. I mean, I know myself that there's key times when suddenly all the processes you have has to change, because you can't work like that on the next level up. What would you say those key moments in time are?
I think I've heard people talk about this before, how there's a bit of a rule of seven, and I kind of agree with that in a couple of ways. One is every seven people you add to the company, you don't have to rip it up and start again, certainly if you've got to a bigger level. But in the earlier stages, the difference between running a company of seven people and a company of 14 people is massive. And if you add another seven of 21, again, there's different layers of non-billable roles and stuff that you need is like general stickiness to make stuff work. So kind of like HR and finance, sales and marketing, all of those roles that you wouldn't hire for at the start because it's non-billable, it's expensive, and you want to keep your margins relatively kind of high in terms of what you're doing, just to make sure you've got enough profit to pay yourself a salary, essentially. But I think that's certainly in terms of team size and structure. I found there's another rule of seven that I think is more of a personal thing, but every 7 years, things start to change in terms of actually what do you want out of not just the agency and the business, but also life. And I think just thinking about that journey, I think we've kind of, if we go back to say, I guess like probably close to the third wave of that, but there's been phases where we've had to reinvent ourselves. I think the SE Optimize early days for me went incredibly well. I think the latter days, I wouldn't say it was bad, but I think we did start to stagnate. And I think we got to a point of, okay, well, I went through certain life events and that changed my perspective on, you know what, I just want to be enjoying what I'm doing every single day. And maybe every single day is a bit ambitious, but certainly the flip side of, if I'm not enjoying myself for too many days in a row, I know something needs to change. And that was part of it. And I think there's a position in play from the market of what people are looking for, that you don't have to change and evolve every single day or single week. And obviously Google might make you think otherwise at times, but you do need to grow with the market and pay attention to what customers are valuing. So for us, I think we went from kind of a local Oxfordshire agency into more of a national agency. We went from SEO into paid search and maybe some more of like analytics, paid social, and then actually narrowed the target audience in terms of the niche that we were focusing on as well. And I think that probably came in about a 7-year cycle in terms of the big changes and an evolution behind that, and focus more on SEO, content marketing, digital PR, probably back in 2012. And I think there's been a further evolution and growth over the last probably 2 to 3 years for us, maybe 3 or 4, where it's just really doubling down on e-commerce as being kind of our key sector that we work with, and that's where the growth from our clients are coming from. So yeah, a few answers behind that, but I think certainly for me, once you start to grow in size, but also that kind of like 7 years in time, that's where you really need to think about, okay, well, longer term, what's going to get us through the next 7 years, if you like, and really start to think ahead.
Yeah. Something I picked up on there when you were saying that is a lot of people don't understand that there's a lots of unbillable costs relating to running an agency. I mean, some SEOs I've talked to say, oh, well, you know, I mean, I'm sat here doing all the work and they're charging this and I'm only getting that. But they don't understand all these unbillable costs behind running an agency and keeping them in a job.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think at a small level, if you've got clients that are paying, I don't know, a couple of thousand a month or something like that, the equivalent in the way that the client would look at that would be, okay, well, what could I hire as an in-house role? Is that someone who's part-time through to full-time in terms of an equivalent salary? And I get that makes sense. If the agency is providing you with one person as a consultant, then maybe there's mentally the way that they look at things, that's a comparison and it's logical. It doesn't necessarily mean that they would find the same level of experience, for example, but again, it's a fair comparison at face value. I think when it comes to if you're hiring an agency, you're typically hiring a team. So for us, you would likely have a strategist, an analyst, a project manager that organizes them behind the scenes and make sure that we do what we said we would do and we deliver against a roadmap. You might have an account manager, you might have copywriters or a content team, you could have digital PR specialists, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of moving parts. And then, like I say, there are some unbillable roles within that where you just need to make the trains run on time, essentially. So project management is part of that, resourcing across the agency, HR, because you need to make sure that you're retaining your team and they're growing with you and they've got career progression as well as, kind of just looking at what we can get out of them as an agency. It goes both ways. It's a two-way relationship. It's finance. If clients don't pay on time, then we can't pay salaries, et cetera, et cetera. So we need to make sure that actually we're collecting money. And then there's the new business side as well, if we're growing, and that all costs money. Sometimes you have an office. We actually don't anymore, but we used to have quite a big office in London. All of these things are centered around how do you drive excellence for your clients. So they're all costs in one way or another that go towards that. Training, learning and development, that's all part of what goes into this. But the client ultimately wants to pay for results. But results doesn't just, in terms of the input, it's not just people's time. There's a lot that goes around that as well. So yeah, there's certainly some maybe hidden costs to the client, but I mean, it should be pretty transparent what it takes to run an agency and that type of thing, that although it might not be clearly visible in the form of a deliverable, if you took away HR, finance, sales and marketing, you're probably not going to have an agency for very long. So you need to be making sure that you're keeping pressure on each of those things as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Now, you mentioned that, is it right in thinking that you're now a remote-only agency?
Correct, yeah.
Right. So how did you find that progression from, you know, obviously COVID probably had something to do with it, but how did you find that progression, that shift from a team perspective and an agency perspective to suddenly having people in the office to suddenly everyone working from home?
Honestly, I think overall, I think it's actually good. I was always going to say we loved it. I think that maybe I'm an optimist by nature. And I think maybe looking back, there were a few more stumbling blocks than perhaps I'd even like to admit myself, but overall, I think it was pretty smooth. I think certainly speaking to some agency owners are kind of very much, we have to be in the office, remote doesn't work for us. I found the opposite is true. And that's not to say I'm right and they're wrong or vice versa. It's you have to find what works for you, and different companies will value different things. But for us, we already practiced we called it a work from home Wednesday. So the idea was we were getting client meetings and scheduling was happening across the 5 days of the week. And we just decided, okay, well, we're all behind by the end of the week because we're in meetings all the time. So let's do a work from home Wednesday so that you can get your head down, get stuff done. If you need to be in a client meeting, we're not going to be completely strict to the point that it's annoying for clients, but we will try and have a bit of structure behind what we're doing. And then that allowed people to work remotely 1 day a week. We actually rolled that out to 2 days a week. I think probably at the end of 2019 that we were trialing with that. We took Friday, which we were quite reluctant to do at first, because I remember conversations around, well, if you give people a Friday work from home day, they'll take it as a long weekend. And I think that was the view back then. And I think the view now is completely kind of, let's focus on the value of people's work. You need to be available for core hours. You need to be able to work as a team. But ultimately, we're going to judge you by the success of your work, which is how it should be. It shouldn't be, oh, at 9:21 yesterday morning, you were checking Facebook, because if you're doing outstanding work, frankly, who cares? And likewise, the opposite could be true. You could be sat at your desk for 12 hours a day and achieve nothing. So again, it's like you need to be focusing on, yeah, kind of what's most important to clients and to the company. And remote working has allowed us to tap into a network of talent. I mean, most of our team are across the UK, but that's tapped into people who are in, say, Manchester, Cornwall, Birmingham. I'm in Oxfordshire myself, but basically I'm not sure we have anyone that's maybe one or two that are in central London. Most people are now outside. So if we had an office today, you can see you've got a map behind your head. I'm not sure where I would put a pin on that map for our office, because we are distributed, and we meet up for client meetings. We have quarterly business reviews that we always try and encourage that they're face-to-face with clients. And then we'll meet up as a team and make sure that we ideally just do something fun. It's actually less about being productive on those days and more about the connection between the team. Overall, I don't know if I'd say we'd never go back, but right now I think it's working for us. And if it works for us and it works for our clients, then I'm happy to continue with it. And yeah, I would say our experience overall has been very positive.
Yeah, I think years ago when I ran my own agency and it was very much office-based, I mean, I found it such a struggle to grow the agency, not because of the work coming in, but actually getting people to service it, because there just wasn't the talent around where I was, you know. Yeah. And I think that going remote, it has opened up the talent pool tremendously.
It has. Yeah, I completely agree. And my original agency in Oxford, I mean, there's pros and cons of Oxford. One is the big positives is you've got a very good university, Oxford University, and a pretty good university, Oxford Brookes, which is what I went to. And I think between those two universities, we managed to hire very good grads that we could train up. But there's still an element of these people day one are not client facing and ready to go and billable. You do have to put some of the groundwork in. London, you obviously have people that are available and willing to go. I do find those people quite typically do move around in jobs more frequently because there's more options. And it makes sense. It's a competitive market. But remote, it feels like you get the best of both worlds. You can get talent who are ready to go, and the clients that we work with, then they're paying for a service where you're not necessarily, you don't want to have the patience of this is going to take 6 or 12 months to get someone up to speed. You probably have 6 or 12 days. if that, it's kind of like just hit the ground running and let's get started. And that's what they need. And that's what they should be be able to get from us as well. So yeah, I think remote has been great for that. Equally, if we need to bring in specialist skill sets that maybe they don't require a full-time role, multilingual would be a good example. We might be doing SEO or digital PR or something, say in Italian, for example. And that could be quite campaign-based. So we can work with someone for, say, 2 or 3 months, bring them in for a specialist skill set, and that might be a part-time project, then that's, again, valuable for both sides.
Yeah. Now, regarding the agency life, I've noticed quite a few agencies over the past year have gone to only servicing e-commerce brands.
Yep.
Right. And obviously yourself, you say you focus on e-commerce brands, but for all these agencies that has flicked the switch, what are the positive advantages to building up an agency just working with e-commerce brands compared to service-based businesses?
So I think a lot of it is positioning. I think from an agency perspective, you need to map out your dream clients that you want to work with, and then how do you work backwards towards what that looks like. And for us, I mean, there's another step, which is a step that we did, is we looked back at where have our best client results been in the past and what do we want to do more of. And like, e-commerce is obviously measurable. All of our e-commerce case studies are we made X percent of an increase in the ROI. So it's very much this is, yeah, kind of how much organic revenue you made before and after. And we found, I mean, we've been working with e-commerce clients since we got started, like 2006. In my early days, like Miele, one of the big brands that I worked with and used to work from their office are in my hometown. And I think that's kind of one of the earlier clients that we worked with in that space. And then we've moved on to kind of brands that we focused on across that time. And it's very much, we've built a track record and a level of experience through to like ASICS that we work with and have worked with for the last 6 years. And again, it's like building up that kind of track record that people will buy into. So for us, when we moved into e-commerce, it was based on, okay, well, actually we specialized in e-commerce for essentially the last 10 years anyway. We just haven't publicly stated it. And now then we started to call it out. We realized, I think at least 80% of our client base and revenue was e-commerce at that point in time. And that felt like it was enough to say, okay, well, the focus moving forward is we want more of them. That's our profile. Our win rate is higher when we pitch for e-commerce brands. Our track record of results and client retention and longevity is really strong. Let's double down on doing what we're great at. And it really did fit that sector very, very comfortably. So that's kind of the decision process from our side. I agree there's quite a few agencies that have now done that. And I think trying to say that you do certainly multiple services across different sectors can start to look a bit like a jack of all trades, unless you've really got like the scale and the track record behind it. So picking down on kind of one service, one market, feels like there's enough companies there. If you wanted to say we've got 250 brands that we want to work with in e-commerce, and let's try and win 5-10% of those, there's enough to keep us busy before you go beyond that. And yeah, I think for us that's been very much the approach. Let's do one thing and then we can focus our marketing around that sector. That really helps. And it gives you more focus in many areas.
Yeah. Do you think being a specialist agency in today's climate really makes a big difference? Because obviously, I mean, a lot of brands I've talked to, because I've been into brands and training the in-house teams and things, yep, they are looking for that specialism now. They're looking for an agency to do that bit of the overall jigsaw puzzle. Do you think that really, from an agency growth point of view, allows you to be hyper-focused?
It does. Yeah, I think it does, because people buy into track records. I think if you look at, if you've done, and again, you can get granular in SEO, just saying you've done SEO for someone could mean anything these days. So yeah, what did you actually do? Was it content strategy? Was it digital PR? Was it something technical? And again, just technical in itself is still quite a broad term. So I think that, I mean, we've seen it with people doing news SEO, for example, as well as e-com. There might be some that's kind of a bit more B2B, SaaS based, financial services, travel, etc. But I think having a sector and then maybe having a deeper specialism behind it means that if someone's making a decision, and I don't know, just to use two brands, if you're Tesco and you know someone that's done an amazing job for the same thing that you want to hire someone for, and they've done a lot of work with Sainsbury's, it gives you that level of confidence that, okay, well, they understand what it takes to get results in our space. That helps a lot, because if you put yourself in their shoes, they're making a decision that they're putting their name on, and they want it to work. They, as much as people may complain sometimes about client agency relationships, I mean, really, it should be you're on the same team, you're trying to achieve the same objective, and that client wants the agency to win because that's why they hired them, that's why they're paying them money, and that's why they picked them in the first place. So to give them confidence that they've picked the right one, if you've got a track record that shows that you can do the exact thing they're looking for someone that's similar to them, that's going to add a lot of weight and importance to their decision-making criteria.
Right. So just thinking about that for a moment, would there become a time when you sort of end up competing against yourself for different clients?
Yeah, there might be a case where you say, actually, these are too close. So like Sainsbury's and Tesco might be a good example of, if you're still working with one of them, you might not be able to work with the other one. So that you have to pick your battles and your clients and be careful about that. Some you might be able to say, okay, well, the focus on this client is something, is a different category versus what you're focusing on, or a different market. But again, you've got to be careful about how you do that. But I do think in terms of being a specialist in a sector, then taps into, okay, well, if we're the best at this sector, you kind of have to accept that if you want to work with us, we will be working with other people that are similar. But again, it depends how similar. If they're your top competitor, if you had to list one or two, then that's probably a deal breaker. If it's there, I don't know, in the top 20 to 50 plus, then there's only so many opportunities you could take away from an agency as well. But it all goes as part of the job, and it's just conversations you have to have with clients when these situations come up.
Do you think there's ever a thing like you've got one chance for like to take two businesses that are doing the same thing in the same market? Do you think, well, you know, we can't replicate it because a lot of things we've done, we've had as chance now?
Yeah. Potentially. I guess it depends on that situation. I think there could be, yeah, certainly on the conflict side, but equally, yeah, it's looking at how you work with clients as well. It's trying to, you've always got to prove yourself, whether it's renewing an existing contract or pitching for a new business. It's all about proving that there's opportunity on the table and you can take it further forward, because if it's reached a point of stagnation, if you like, then that's difficult for people to buy into. But yeah, again, it's quite often with agencies, it's about the people that will be working on that account as well. So if your best people are tied up already on existing clients, and you've got a relatively junior team, for example, that's going on to a new client, then the new client probably isn't going to be so happy about that. And equally, the old client might not be so happy if you move the best people away from that account. So again, it's these types of things are what I'm saying. When you run an agency, there's all sorts of things to consider that, yeah, you just have to weigh up and then make the right decision at that point in time on how to move forward.
Right. So when you're working with these more established brands that are out there, how important is it for them to actually know who actually is the people working on my campaigns?
Oh, it's vital. I think it's vital because people go through, I mean, they call it the bait and switch of, you might have an agency that will come in with very senior people that they're great, but once they've won the pitch, they've never seen that again. And if I'm involved in pitches on our side, I will normally make it clear to clients that I'm involved probably on a QBR basis. So I'll oversee it and I'm there as a escalation point, essentially, if shit hits the fan, to be honest. I'll help to fix those situations. And of course I would, but they have a team in place that they'll be working with day to day. And it's a team that they buy into. And I've certainly had this feedback before where I might do a good job in a pitch and they might appreciate that, but they're just like, so what, Kevin? It's not you that's going to be there. And that's the right comment. It should be about the team. So when it comes to new business, it's a team approach and it's a team that they would be working with. And that's how it should be, because otherwise it's all about setting expectations. And if you set expectations that, I know, I could go into any pitch situation and give them a forecast that we're going to double their revenue over the next 12 months. I'm pretty sure if I then take that back to our team and tell them that's the KPI, there's going to be a few unhappy people. So actually, like, that consistency from pitch through to working with a client and the renewals, etc., is really key.
So how involved are the team in the actual pre-sales process?
Yeah, so they're pretty involved. Certainly if there's a pitch situation, they would build out the pitch decks, they'd put work into the strategy, and then that would feed into like the proposal and the pricing model, because we need to be confident on what we think the opportunity is that we forecasted, what we think it would take in terms of activity level to get there. And if I'm just making up numbers, then that's a recipe for disaster. And again, I'm sure there's been situations where I've done that in the past. And it's not good for anyone. It's not good for me, because I feel like, oh, great, we've won a client and now our team really isn't happy about it. And it's certainly not good for the team, because if you look at it from their perspective, they don't feel as invested in it. And they think that I've just told them what I wanted to hear, which, again, I would try to stay away from as much as possible. And certainly these days we've got a process and checks in place that make sure that the team are confident in a proposal before it goes out, because we want to set this up for success from day one. We don't want to be landing something and then have to reconfigure it because actually it didn't make sense.
Right. So I want to talk about more the agency growth side now. So, like, in the early days, what would you see as the key factors to enable the agency to grow and scale?
I think there's two sides to every agency. There's the new business growth side, and then there's the talent delivery side. And I think both are equally as important. I think sometimes in the early stages, I might have put too much importance on the growth side and less on the delivery. So it's like, okay, well, how do I free myself up to focus on growth and make sure that we've got a team behind it delivering? And in theory, I think that's actually quite a good way to do it. But you've got to be having a solid delivery team that's delivering great work to our clients. And sometimes it's more than great work. It's actually the client servicing that goes on in terms of the renewals and making sure that we're growing together with that client as well. It's not just getting results. And I think that part is crucial, because if you're doing great work for your clients and you're renewing those clients, then when you're winning new business, you're growing. And I've been in a situation before where I think we've had an incredible year for new business. Trying to think when it was now, maybe like 2016 or something, I guess. And I think our overall revenue would have stayed the same despite the fact we smashed all of our targets on new business. And that's because we lost clients. And it's pretty simple. You need to be able to retain your clients, ideally grow with them. And then if you can do that, then, like I said, new business is growth. But until then, retention is growth in the sense of if you're not retaining your clients and you've got quite an uphill battle. So I think the first step is actually retain your clients. And there's a book I read recently, and it's kind of like, well, imagine what your company would look like today if you never lost a client. And it's like, it's quite a scary question, because it's like, oh, wow, we'd be 10 times, 20 times the size, especially if you grew with them. So, and like, some things run its course. You don't expect that every client, every employee is going to be with you for 20 years. Like, that's a very tough ask, and if not impossible ask. But at the same time, there's always stuff that could be improved. So that's the solid foundation. And I think that's probably the most important starting point. And then the new biz element would come on top of that, in terms of how do you attract, firstly, through your marketing, and then how do you close and grow on the new business side?
Right. So the agency market, I call it very vast. You know, there's agencies everywhere, you know, offering good services, you know. So how does an agency like yourself stand out from the crowd? So, you know, when you go into pictures, you think, well, this is the agency I want to work with compared to them. I mean, are there any sort of key factors and elements that distinguish you as an agency compared to other agencies?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes that goes back to the positioning as well, of what do you do and who do you do it for? And if you can be as granular as about that as possible, then I think that's really going to help you, because then you're a better fit and a match for those types of clients. So if we had a B2B brand come to us today and say, do you want to do paid search, for example? That's not a good fit for us. If we had a e-commerce brand that's similar to, say, one of our clients that we've worked with, and again, probably not too direct a competitor, but certainly something where we've got a track record in that space, and they wanted to do SEO, then straight away we feel like, okay, we've got a good chance for this. Let's go for it. And we have built a pre-qualification scorecard, because we will get inquiries through our website that some of them are great and a good fit. Some of them, they're just literally blasting out an RFP to 10, 20 companies, and they just want to see what comes back. And if it's not a good fit for us and we feel like we're not going to win it, then we're not going to put time into that. So we have to pre-qualify on what we think is a good opportunity. And yeah, it comes down to, there's a number of different factors, but us understanding, is this a client that we think we can do a good job for? We've got a track record in that space. Sometimes it's, do you know someone in that organization as well? Like, we've had clients that have moved from previous roles into new roles and they've taken us with them. That's always good, because again, from their perspective, if you've held a pitch with 3 to 5 agencies and you've never worked with any of them before, it is a leap of faith where you're hoping that, based on, I don't know, a 90-minute pitch or a conversation, you've picked the right one. Someone could be having a good day, someone could be having an off day, and that might not be a reflection of what it's like to work with them but further down the line. Whereas we've had cases where people have worked with us for a couple of years, we've done great work with them, and then they've moved into a new role at a new company, and straight away they're kind of like, okay, well, we want to work with ReSignal again, because that worked really well last time. And it's making their decision kind of more comfortable and based on knowledge, as opposed to, yeah, kind of a bit of guesswork, if you like. So yeah, and that goes both ways. Like I say, we have to pre-qualify the client as much as they pre-qualify us.
Yeah. On the flip side of that, I know very good agencies that lose clients because, like, the CMO has moved to a different company. A new one comes in, and the first thing that they want to do is, you know, make a point and radically change everything. So then you know, you sort of lose clients that way. So just because you lose clients doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing a bad job.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's right. We've certainly had situations on both sides of that. We've had CMOs that have come in and maybe brought us with. We've had CMOs that have left clients and new ones have come in with fresh ideas. And again, it's they want to see something new. So yeah, it's not always a reflection on the agency. I think for us, it's let's do the best job possible. Let's get to know multiple senior stakeholders so that you're not just reliant on one touch point at a company. And yeah, like I say, kind of give it our best shot. But some stuff's out of your hands that can't be helped. You have to factor in churn into any forecast that you're not going to retain all of your clients. That can be your target, but reality in terms of what you're budgeting for, you probably would budget for some churn on that side. Equally, you'd budget for some growth on others as well. So yeah, it's trying to be balanced about the good and the bad that may happen along the way.
Yeah. So over the years, do you say 20 years you've been running agencies, what would you say the key challenges during those times have been for you as an agency owner, CEO, founder?
So I started in 2007. There was a recession in 2008.
Yes, don't tell me about that.
if I'm honest, that was quite a good time to be setting up an agency because our baseline was zero. So we probably had a slow year in 2008. I wouldn't have known any different because I just started a business, and it's kind of like at that point, everything is growth. So because the only way is up. We've had recessions further down the line that have, certainly, or kind of like periods of time in terms of the economy where things have been harder and tougher, and that may be affected us. We've had clients that have, like I say, kind of had changes like we've just spoken about, taken budget elsewhere or centralized into the US and all sorts of things like that that have had setbacks. I think client retention is a big part of it. We've had 1 year, I think we lost three of our biggest clients in Q1 of a new year, probably within Jan and Feb, and that was a big setback. And again, you need to pick yourself up and go again. A lot of the challenges are the roller coaster. If I'm honest, if I looked back and said what are the biggest challenges, there it's personal. It's when there's stuff going on in your personal life and you have to run a business alongside it. So for me, in 2012, my dad died of cancer. That was something that, again, my way of dealing with that was to work through it and to certainly, I mean, be there for my family, absolutely. But from a work perspective, I left my old agency. I started a new one. I probably made too many decisions too quickly and should have just actually just taken a break and gone for a grieving process, if I'm honest. And there was another situation in 2008. I went through a divorce. We ran the business together and I had to go through a share buyback. And the company during that period and kind of in the run-up to that definitely wasn't running in a way that I would have liked. And I think we both wanted to take the company in a different direction. We had quite a lot of issues culturally with the team that, again, kind of, like I say, I think there's a lot that I think once I was able to take the company in the direction that I wanted to, felt much more confident about that. And it's not to say that my way was right versus another way being wrong. It's kind of just two separate ways to run a company. And I think those challenges have been much more difficult to deal with than anything the economy or clients will throw at us, because it's how do you manage life alongside a business when, again, shit hits the fan. It's the stuff that it's like no one wants to deal with. I find when COVID came around, at least it's the same for everyone, and it kind of feels like, okay, well, we're all going through this, we're all learning, we'll figure it out, we'll find a way. But I actually found that because I've gone through certainly quite a lot of challenges in the past, that's built a level of resilience where I could then say, I almost use that as a frame of reference of, okay, well, I've come through what I think are two bigger challenges than this. So I'm not going to get beaten by a dip in the market or whatever it might be. I mean, no one knew in the early stages of COVID, for example. So yeah, I think there's always stuff that comes up, but the tricky ones are the life ones, because they're the ones that you don't necessarily see coming, you don't plan for. And as much as you try to not let it affect your business and professional life, you're human, of course it does. So that's the tricky points. It's how do you deal with that and try and keep everything moving in a way that feels like to the team, you want to look like, oh, I'm in control, I know what I'm doing. I don't want to look like I'm a mess. But there's times in both of those periods I absolutely would have been. So yeah, I think that's where the challenge is for me, the real challenges come from. And like I say, it's the curveballs that life throws at you, and then have to find a way to deal with it. But that's much trickier for me than anything a client or an economist could throw at us.
Yeah, I can so relate to some of the things you're saying there. I have a sense that, well, you know, there's always a solution to any problem. And when it comes to the business agency side, well, you know, let's just sort it out. Let's just happen. But, you know, I mean, in the past, there has been personal things, and I won't go into it because we haven't enough time. But, you know, I can relate to some of the things you're saying. And I think it makes you more resilient, you know.
Oh, it does.
On the business challenges, you know, you go in, not every day is how you're going to expect it. Not everything's going to be positive. But, you know, something inside you that you've built up to say, well, okay, this has happened. Let's just get together and sort it out. What's the solution?
Yeah, that's right. Not every business situation is fixable, but you can at least learn from it. There's always stuff where it's like, oh, that's disappointing. That didn't go the way I wanted it to. But there's always learnings that you can then take into the next one. And like I say, some of the stuff that I think I've learned over time, sometimes I just need to give things 24 hours. Like the knee-jerk reaction is, this is a disaster. And then it's go for a walk, have a good night's sleep, wake up the next day. And it's like, okay, this isn't ideal, but this is what we're going to do about it. And just actually try and put together a plan and be level-headed about it. Because, yeah, like I say, most things are, there's never a magic wand, but most things you can either fix or learn from.
Right. So, the people out there that's sort of new to building an agency, what sort of advice would you give those people?
Don't do it. I'm joking. I'm serious in the sense of figure out if it's right for you, because growing an agency isn't right for everyone. And I think you have to figure it out as you go along. And there's certain times where, I mean, I was asked this, I was on the podcast with Chris Simmons last week, and he was like, if there ever been any times where you want to get out? And I was like, I'd be lying if I said no. my answer to him was, there's also times where I feel like I could go on forever. So it's like, it's figuring out actually what do you want to do, and what lights you up, what do you enjoy? Because if you're going to run an agency, you're in it for the long term. You've got to be doing, I mean, you might be able to do it for 3 years, be very successful, and then exit, for example. But those stories are rare. I think a lot of people are kind of more to, it's a 5 to 10 year, and probably more like a 10 year tenure, if you like, of in terms of what you're putting into that. So that's a long amount of time that you need to be sure that what you want to do is the right thing. Let's say you've decided that is the right thing for you. I think the advice for me is, I've always found just trying to stay level-headed has helped me a lot. If I never get that carried away with success to the point that I should probably celebrate success more than I do. Equally, if things go badly, I try not to get too down about it as well. I kind of, it will annoy me at first. But again, it's like I say, it's part of that journey. You learn from it. You have to pick yourself up and go again. And if you can't do that, that makes it really hard. And equally, like I say, if you get too carried away with your own success, I think that can be an issue as well. So I think just being kind of like, not getting too carried away with the good times, not getting too down about the bad times, and trying to see it as all part of the journey. Those failures will turn to successes. Those successes won't last forever, and et cetera, et cetera. It's all a cycle, but it's accepting that that is part of that journey. You have to be willing to get rejected a lot. You have to be willing to think that you've won something and get it taken away from you, et cetera, et cetera. But overall, I would say overall the upside is worth the downside, but there's sacrifices. I mean, I've mentioned, again, like on the personal side, but I think there's certain things where, you have to be prepared that this isn't a 9-to-5. There's times where you've got to just do what it takes, and hopefully you can benefit from the rewards from that as well. It's not the easy option. I think if you're going to do it, it's just being prepared for what it's going to take to do that and what you need to keep plugging away at.
Yeah, I can 100% relate that you need to really want to build an agency. I mean, I've had this conversation with many people, and the one thing I've said is I never, ever, ever, ever want to start an agency up again.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had opportunities. I've had, you know, clients on tap opportunities, but it's just not for me.
Which is the right answer, because the right answer is the right answer for you.
Yeah.
So that's great.
And, exactly.
And yeah, I think that's really important. If you're doing what you enjoy, I'm pretty confident you've at least got a very good chance at thriving at that. If you're doing what you hate, then, I mean, even if you're good at it, who cares? You're not enjoying life. So, yeah, my take is life's too short. It's definitely, find what it is that you enjoy doing. You spend a lot of time doing it, and, yeah, make sure that, like I say, if you look back and it's, oh, I've made a lot of money but miserable for 10 years, so is that worth the trade-off? For me, no. And I would imagine for a lot of people, maybe it's the same thing.
Yeah. So is there anything that we haven't discussed yet that you really feel the audience needs to know or hear about?
I mean, I'm always happy to answer any questions. I mean, like I say, there's rabbit holes everywhere in terms of what we could discuss. But no, I think in terms of just overall advice from an agency front, I think those are the key things that we've covered. And like I say, it's enjoying the journey for me is really important. I think that's crucial. So yeah, make sure that you're doing that, and do a sense check as well, because you could be enjoying the journey for year one, year two, but like we've spoken about, that agency changes, the company changes, the people change, and make sure that you're doing things in the right way. Make sure that you're working with people that you like and enjoy spending time with, and both on your team and with your clients as well. And I think that would certainly help to make that a much smoother journey.
Well, many, many thanks for taking your time to come on today. Now, is there any conversations you'd like to have with people, and where could they find you to have those conversations?
Yeah, of course. Always happy to help. I think I'm most active on LinkedIn, so definitely look me up and feel free to follow or add me as contact on there. Always happy to answer any questions. Likewise on Twitter, so Kev Gibbo, and follow me on there. And if anyone's got any questions in terms of certainly the SEO side and agency growth, then always happy to help people.
Well, Kevin, many thanks for your time, and all the best.
Yeah, great to chat. Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.